subsections, part four of Rav Kook, in this first part which deals with Eretz Yisrael. And I guess the introduction that I'd want to say is, of course, Rav Kook, of course, there are eight pieces here that deal specifically with Eretz Yisrael, and then Rav Kook is going to talk about the whole issue of World War One and so forth. But Rav Kook clearly believes that certain things can happen more authentically in Eretz Yisrael itself. So, for example, I guess Nevuah, which is really the topic of part five, can only happen in Eretz Yisrael. I know Yechezkel prophesies outside of Israel, but he began prophesizing in Israel. So even though most of Yechezkel or all of Sefer Yechezkel is found outside and the Har Kvar in Babylonia, but we understand, we believe that Yechezkel became a prophet in Israel as a young person, was exiled with the first group that was exiled by Nebuchadnezzar, and continued to prophesize. But he couldn't have gotten the inspiration or the ability, the intellectual ability to be a prophet if he was not in Eretz Yisrael. A good example maybe of how Eretz Yisrael is special is Avraham gets his name Avraham, becomes Avram, is changed to Avraham only in Israel. So Rav Kook would say, I don't know if he does say this, but he would say that the name could not make that change outside of Eretz Yisrael. This is something unique about the different identity that he picks up once he gets to Eretz Yisrael. Yes, Jeff.
What about Yosna with divine help of his dreams outside of Israel?
It's a good question. Maybe it's not Nevuah, maybe it is Ruach. In other words, I guess you would say that Yosef had the ability to do so in Eretz Yisrael, so he continued to leave when he went outside of Israel. It would be the same thing. Yosef starts to prophesy, gets these dreams starting in Israel, and he's able to see into the future, so this continues once he goes down to Egypt as well. It's the same thing. He couldn't start it on his own. He couldn't self-start it on his own if he started in Egypt. Okay, so
Rabbi,
yeah, yes.
Isn't it possible that maybe this only applies to after Matan Torah?
Yeah, it's possible. I think Rav Kook would probably say that it applies even before Matan Torah. There's something unique about Israel, that applies in all times. I think it's what Rav Kook would probably say. I don't know. I'm second guessing Rav Kook, but I believe this is not a halachic issue that a halachas take place after Sinai. Before Sinai, they did what they want. This is all about something that's mystical, that's really built into the actual existence of the land of Israel itself. So, for example, that's why Nevuah can only be a Ruach HaKodesh, can only be an Eretz Yisrael. And you're going to say, well, people didn't have Ruach HaKodesh outside of Israel? That's a good question. I don't know. But there are certain differences in terms of how we can find the essence of what Judaism is and the essence of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, whether it's creativity or intellectualness or imagination or Nevuah. Somehow Rav Kook is going to say it's really only about being in Eretz Yisrael. There was a sefer written about 400 years ago called Chesed L'Avraham. It was written by Rav Avraham Azulai. He was the father of the Chidah. Chidah wrote a number of Svarim that was well known, the Chidah. And his father is a very famous story about his father. It's one of these legendary stories about the caves below in the Maris Machpelah. So the story is Rav Avraham Azulai, the person I'm telling you the story was, the Sultan came to visit Hebron and they peered over into where there was this entrance, this hole that you could see into the cave, and his sword fell into the cave, fell all the way down, and the Sultan had to have this sword. So they sent down soldier after soldier to go get it. And of course, every soldier didn't come back. They all died down there. So the Sultan says, well, I'm going to make the Jews responsible. They have to get me back the sword, or else I'm going to wipe out the community of Hebron. One of these great stories. So who's the leader of the community? Rav Avraham Azulai. So he says, I'll go down. He davens for 3 days or 10 days. I don't know how long he goes. And he goes down to the cave. And he comes down to the cave. They lower him down. And he gets there and he opens his eyes, and what does he see? There are three people around him. They say, "We're Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Here's the sword. You know, we got good news and bad news. The good news is you're going to bring the sword back up to the Sultan, the Jewish community will be saved. The bad news is we'll see you back here within the week. You know, in other words, you're going to pass away." And that's the story itself. So he goes back up, brings up the sword, and of course he passes away. This is the legendary story about this individual, Rav Avraham Azulai, that I haven't told you anything about. But according to he writes in Sefer Chesed Avram that a person gets a new neshama when they come into Eretz Yisrael, like as if to say, because this is, once again, this is not Rav Kook. I'm just trying to lay the groundwork for this piece of Rav Kook. as if to say they swap it out. Like you have a computer and you change the motherboard or you change the memory or something. You take one piece out and put another piece in. Or almost like maybe like on Shabbos, we get in the Shema Yisrael, we get an additional Shema. So Rav Avraham Azulay writes in the Sefer Chesed Avraham that you would get a new Neshama when you come there as well. Kadosh Baruch Hu, there's a special Neshama even that you have for Eretz Yisrael. These are the kind of things that really, the Rav Kook is really basing himself upon it. And therefore, consequently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules over the land in a special way. We relate to it in a special way. The existence is special. And this is some of what really comes across in this fashion. So let's begin and take a look at the pieces here from part 4. And hopefully I can get to part 5 as well. So writes Rav Kook as fellow. Here's the English Hebrew on the left side, English on the right side. And once again, if you look for example, if you look for a moment, let's make this a little bit bigger. Can I make it bigger? There, good for you. Okay. That we're talking about here, the subtitles. Once again, these come from the later editions of Sefer Orot. They were the original Sefer Orot published in 1920 did not have subtitles; it only had numbers really. But these titles and subtitles were really written in Hebrew, and I think the edition of the 1950s, 59, if I'm not mistaken. But when they published this edition, they're following basically the 1920 edition. But to kind of give you a little bit of a direction, in the English they're putting in the subtitles. So what's going on here? So we're going to read Exile Galut. Distorts Judaic vision. The thoughts of a Jew regains authenticity to the degree that they're attached to the land of Israel. The more that you're attached to the land of Israel, the more that you have authentic Judaism itself. We'd like to say, you know, that Orthodoxy is authentic Judaism, but the truth is Rav Kook's going to say you got to live in Israel for authentic Judaism. You can be authentic if you're living in Eretz Yisrael. If you're not, you'll see in a moment Rav Kook says, if you're not in Israel, you can get it by being, and I want to be in Israel, want to be. In other words, if you really want to be in Israel, you'll want to be in Israel, but you're not in Israel, you live for Israel, you may also be able to kind of jumpstart that stuff, even if you're outside the geographic location. Okay, unusual concept. So writes Rav Kook as follows. Yev Shalad Dam Yisrael, I can't even see the whole thing, just give me a little bit here. Yev Shalad Dam Yisrael, Shiyem Masur V'Neman L'Machshavosav. It's not possible, it's impossible for a Jew to be faithful and complete to his thoughts, and L'Machshavosav, Hegyonosav, and his ideas, and Rayonosav, and his thinking, V'Demyonosav, and his visions, and B'chus L'Arts, outside of Israel. A person can't really get the real McCoy by living outside of Eretz Yisrael. Kitfu Tikunat and Emanat Hazot Be'er Yisrael. In the same way that he is going to be Neman, faithful, to Tchunot, I guess his purposes, and they're going to be in Eretz Yisrael itself, the Tchunot, what he wants to do. So by living in Eretz Yisrael, you're never going to have the authentic real McCoy. You're going to have like something similar to it, but it's never going to be 100%. Why? Because that's what Eretz Yisrael is. That's the key based on everything he wrote about in parts 1, 2, and 3. He says, if you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, you're missing something. Something basic is missing. Now, remember, in part 3, Rav Kook said, if you don't really you may not understand you're missing it. But that's because you may not really understand the secrets of the Torah. Rav Kook means, of course, the Kabbalah, and other secrets that are below the mitzvot. You're just doing the mitzvot. If you're just doing the mitzvot, so it's just one other mitzvah, you're not living in Israel. But if you understand deep down what Judaism is, it's got to be in Eretz Yisrael. I know Sinai was outside of Israel. I know there were people lived outside of Israel, but they missed something. Something was not exactly there. So what's really there? Hufata Kodesh, Be'ezah Madrigah Shehein. It translates as manifestation of the holiness, the appearance of holiness, in whatever kind of level that tends to be. The Kiyot Hein Be'Eretz Yisrael Lefi Erech are more pure, more clean in Eretz Yisrael, whatever it is. In other words, in the land of Eretz Yisrael, Lefi Erech, based upon the values themselves. U'b'chus L'Arts Muveret Hein B'Sigim U'Klipot Merubim. And outside of Eretz Yisrael, however, they're mixed with klipot. Klipot, of course, is a Kabbalistic term that refers to coverings, like the shells on a nut, the shells on a seed, and sigim is different types of dross. Sigim is like the bottom of the, you know, you ever have wine that sits for too long a period of time, you get the stuff on the bottom. The grape leaves, that's what the dross, the leftover remaining behind it. Sometimes you have something that's been sitting on the shelf for too long, something stays behind in the bottom of the jar. That's what's, so in other words, in Eretz Yisrael, whatever we have of Kedusha, in the land of Israel, the Kedusha we have tends to be pure, tends to be naki. completely 100% unadulterated. And chutz laretz, whatever kedusha we have, gets mixed in together with other things as well. And that's why you can't get nevuah, so to speak. That's why nevuah can't start. So whatever you are in terms of creativity, in terms of imagination, in terms of intellectual ability, in terms of your kedusha, your holiness, it's going to be only true blue in Eretz Yisrael. That's the theme of Rav Kook. That's what Rav Kook says. Amnam, however, says Rav Kook, there is one caveat. So there's hope for all of us who are not presently living in Eretz Yisrael. Let me just get my pointer here. My pointer is here, pointer where I am, pointer where, okay? Amnami says, Lefi godel ha-teshukah, the more that a person has, the longing, chukah is you want to do something, you want something, you have longing for something, v'akashur, shaladam le'ed jesual, and the connection, the attachment of a person there to Yisrael, even if you are physically, geographically outside of Eretz Yisrael, so in other words, the more that you want to be there, and the more that you really are connected to Eretz Yisrael, and you can define connection to Eretz Yisrael in any way that you want to make it work, Hare Rayanasav Mizdachim Miyesod Avirad Eretz Yisrael HaChofef Al Kol Misha Mitzapel Razo. So if you more that you really want to be attached to Eretz Yisrael, the more that you long for it, your thoughts become purified, become Zachak, Zikuch, becomes clarified, filtered, purified, by virtue of what? Avirad Eretz Yisrael, the air of Eretz Yisrael, the atmosphere of Eretz Yisrael, that where, even though you're not in Israel, right, the air of Israel has been transplanted, HaChofef, that floats over Kol Shemitzapel Rato, anyone who really wants, who really longs to be able to see Eretz Yisrael. So even if you're not in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Kook puts in a caveat, you can still benefit from this if you kind of like you were virtually in Israel. It's like a virtual concept. It's very, very unusual. As he says, it says, Simchud Yerushalayim V'Gilu Bo. Rav Kook quotes the pasuk, of course, Simchud Yerushalayim, make happy Yerushalayim, V'Gilu Bo, be happy within. It's a pasuk that's found in Yeshayahu Perek Samach Vav. So Rav Kook is saying something really very strange. Rav Kook is saying that, you know what, I can be in Eretz Yisrael when I'm not in Eretz Yisrael. And I don't think he's writing that really simply just as a compromise for people in his generation. I think he really believed that. I think he believed there was a way to kind of connect Eretz Yisrael, even being out of it. It's almost like, I guess it'd be almost like saying that, you know, a diplomatic mission is a part of that country, even if it's in Canada. It has a certain different type of understanding what it would be. If I go into the American mission down, if I go into the American consulate down on University Avenue, I'm now studying in America, I'm in the United States. And if I'm, you know, they can give me sanctuary, they can protect me there. I can't leave, right? But I could get protection. Or whatever country you think about what that means, that's what a diplomatic mission is. Or almost the same, maybe, if I wanted to draw another analogy, I'm not sure if this is as good an analogy, it's like a duty-free zone that you have in the airport. How can you go by duty-free when you're in Toronto? Right, I understand, like duty-free when you cross the border, same thing. How does this become duty-free? The answer is, for the laws of duty, the laws of collection of taxes and excise taxes, and so to speak, this becomes outside the land of Canada. It's part of the United States, or the United States part of Canada, whatever you want to kind of understand, or international, however it is. But somehow you can begin to conceptualize that you can be, therefore, still in Chutz Laretz, and you have the strong connection to want to be in Eretz Yisrael. Now, you're probably going to ask, if that's the case, so why would anyone want to go to Israel? I mean, why don't you just... Well, I mean, this, Rav Kook's giving us the out. Rav Kook is saying to us, well, you know what, as long as you really want to be in Israel, if you never get there, you can still have Yisod Ariyah D'Eretz Yisrael. Right? So first of all, if you read Rav Kook carefully, I'm not sure that you get the same level as being in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Read the words carefully in Hebrew. It says, "Lafi godla tshuka v'akasher shal adam le'Yisrael." The greater the connection, the want, the greater the desire to be in Eretz Yisrael, and the connection, harei rayonosav, his thinking, his thoughts, muzan mistachachim yisod avir Eretz Yisrael, becomes filtered and purified from the basis of the land of Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't say necessarily you get the full McCoy. You just get better. HaChofef al kol mishem etzapel aso, which the Virad Eretz Yisrael floats around anyone who wants to go see it. So it's possible to read Rav Kook, at least in my reading, and I'm not sure that this is held up by others, but it's possible to read this to understand that, you know what, okay, if I want to be in Eretz Yisrael, so I get a bump up kind of level, but I'm not really fully in Israel. I can only be in Israel if I'm in Israel. That's one answer. The second answer, I think, is, if you really want to be in Israel, you really want to push yourself, and you're really connected to Israel, if you're really, 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 really connected, then you'll get to Israel. Well, it's part of the reason.
He's right.
Right. Part of the reason why we're here, let's call it brass tacks, you know, let's call it spade a spade. The fact that we're all here is because, you know what, we want to be in Israel, but well, you know, only so much. 90%, we want to be in Israel. 10%, we want to make sure that we have our luxuries here. And we're not willing to give up a whole lot of things. It's a real commitment to give to Eretz Yisrael. And every time we do the calculations, bum, 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 you know what? It balances out. We say, well, a little bit, I haven't tipped the scale yet to go to Eretz Yisrael. So I think the second answer is just as a strong answer. First answer I said is you get Eretz Yisrael, but you don't get 100% of it. So, you know, instead of being completely distorted, I only have a little bit of distortion because I've got a little bit of Eretz Yisrael by being an Eretz Yisrael wannabe. The second answer is if I really believed in one going to Eretz Yisrael, I would go there. Sooner or later, I'd be there. Instead of saying that I want to go, I'm a religious Zionist and so forth. So that's really the, just in terms of what it is. But clearly Rav Kook is saying something unusual, that this idea of spiritually being attached to Eretz Yisrael without being there physically is a new concept. Now let's see, actually he points out here in the footnotes, I want to show you this footnote here. There's a footnote here, it's footnote number 24, I believe. This is Bitzal on the Or writes this here. This is what he's saying here about this is the guy, the wannabe who wants to be in Eretz Yisrael, that the land of Eretz Yisrael hovers over the person who wants to be there. The notion of spiritual attachment to land supersedes spatial barriers may be implicit in Bracha 28 and 30, and is certainly explicit in Likutei Moharan. That's Likutei Moharan is, of course, Breslov. Igeret HaRaya is a letters of Rav Kook, and the letter of Rav Chalap to Rav Kook was published in this and that. So now he's just telling you that this is clearly maybe unusual, but there are other places where you could find somewhat of an indirect references to this concept of creating a connection to Eretz Yisrael even when you're outside of Eretz Yisrael itself. Okay, that's...
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Two questions. Firstly, these footnotes, these are the translator's footnotes. These aren't Tzvi Yehuda's Kook's
That's notes. Correct. That's correct. Correct. That's correct. That's true. Yes.
Okay. And in fact,
I found out when I went through this, because I have the original edition that was put out of this Sefer, the original edition of Sefer Orot that was translated by Bitzal and Na'ar, which was published by a now defunct publisher, Jason Aronson, many, many years ago, and only had the English and didn't have the Hebrew, and was published in paperback, that he actually went back and corrected some of the footnotes and added more to the footnotes. So for this edition, which came out, I think, in the last 10 years or so, I don't know what the publication date is, 2015, he actually went back and improved on some of the footnotes that he wrote earlier. But these are clearly Bezalel Na'or's footnotes, but he's one of the best people knows Rav Kook. Okay, yes, the other question?
The other question is a much more basic one. When he talks about that the Kedusha is pure in Eretz Yisrael, and in Chutz La'aretz it's mixed with, as he translates here, dross.
Yeah.
What is he actually talking about in terms of living in Eretz Yisrael? Because there's a lot of dross in Eretz Yisrael, in the malls, in the governments, in the chiloni. Okay. What does that mean to be in Eretz Yisrael?
So it's a great question. It's a terrific question. Like, you know, if we get to Eretz Yisrael, so things should be great. We expect Mashiach to be walking down the main street, you know, Herzl Street, because every main street in Israel is called Herzl Street, Rehov Herzl. Every city's got a Rehov Herzl. Why don't we see that? And the answer is because we haven't discussed. Let me kind of back it up a step. When Ezra, in Sefer Ezra, talks about the Jewish people going back to Israel, and there are different missions and different groups that go. There's a first group that goes with Zerubbabel and goes with Yeshua the Kohen. And that's a very small group. And then Ezra comes and he brings a larger group. And then there's another group that comes after that. The Jewish people are really on a low level. The Jewish people, and for all that we throw stones at the present situation in Israel, the situation of the Jews who lived in the time of Ezra was not much different in terms of their commitment. They were intermarried mostly. They were not keeping the mitzvot. Ezra has to galvanize them. Ezra came along and was able to get them to recommit. And Nehemiah came along. There's Amanat Yerushalayim. They make a recommitment to Yerushalayim, to Eretz Yisrael. They've got to build things up. But they're not really the superstars that we initially hoped them to be. Eventually, Eretz Yisrael builds up as more and more people come and move, and you develop things. So you have more and more scholars and higher class people that move in. But initially, things are not where they're supposed to be. Now, why not? They went back to Eretz Yisrael. Shouldn't suddenly great things happen? The answer is, some of it depends on how we ourselves trying to discover where is that special uniqueness of the mysterious connection to Hashem. Doesn't mean the fact that it's there, doesn't mean it automatically hits us in the face. You got to be able to find it. If you want to deny Hashem, you can deny Hashem everywhere. If you want to be a chiloni, if you want to be secular, if you want to kind of reject Hashem, you can do it. You can do it in the Temple Mount. You can do it in the Beis HaMikdash. You could find ways. Look, the people in the first temple, they had a base of Mikdash, and yet they turned away from Hashem. It doesn't mean, doesn't stop us from kind of messing ourselves up. It just means the potential you have to rise is going to rise higher. You can only, let's say, as if to say, I don't know, you can only go so high, like say you go 30,000 feet like an airplane, like a jet can maybe go higher in a higher atmosphere. But if you don't take off, if you don't know how to fly the thing, you're never going to get off the ground. Or worse, you'll crash and burn.
So Rabbi. Not,
so let me just say one more thing. The other part of this is, Rav Kook talks, doesn't give us timelines. That's actually very important. People think that Rav Kook means you go to Eretz Yisrael, and bingo, things are going to happen. We know that Rav Kook does not have timelines. We're 100 years after Rav Kook. We're 2022. This first edition was written in 1920, went to press, and was published in 1920. It's 100 years later. So, but it's really baby steps. I mean, we've taken baby steps. We're still in diapers. Now, you know, even Einstein wore diapers when he was a baby. So what does that mean? He wasn't Einstein? Of course he was Einstein. But the brain still had to develop. He had to really grow intellectually. He needed to be creative. He needed to mature. That's where we are in the pieces of Jewish history. You want another place to mature, to keep developing? Well, Einstein will become an Einstein once he gets to his bar mitzvah, maybe. But right now he's still in diapers and he's still in the playpen. But you can see in the Einstein that he's got potential to become an Einstein somehow. He's playing differently. So all I'm saying is that's the same analogy that you would say about today. We have the potential to do it, but we don't do it. We haven't done it. Some places have done it. You know what? There are places, surely many Jews who are keeping Torah and mitzvot and so forth. There's a certain uniqueness and specialness to it. But there are people in the earth as well who's looking it right in the eye who don't see it. They got their eyes closed. Comment, Jeff?
Rabbi. So, yeah. Hang on, I just finished my point, Jeff.
I'm sorry.
So, if we're living in Eretz Yisrael, if we had Seder Boker in Eretz Yisrael, would our learning be on a higher Madrega because of that?
Potentially.
Okay.
Potentially, okay? I can't describe it anymore.
I love that question. Great question. Yeah. And you know what, Rabbi? Here's the thing. It's logical to me. You can't have this connection unless we all understand what that Torah is.
Yeah.
I'm speaking to, you know how you always say Yeres is talking to Yeres? Well, I'm talking to myself.
Yeah.
If we don't understand the laws, if we don't understand the Torah, if we're not versed in it,
yeah,
how could we really have that spiritual connection?
Oh, well, there you go. Okay.
You're not talking the same language.
Right. So all our cook is simply saying is you can reach that level. That you will reach the level or not really depends on us. It's not automatic. But if you're a mystic like Rav Kook, if you're going to kind of sit and delve in these kind of things, you can hit that level. If you're simply going to walk the streets and beaches of Eretz Yisrael, you're not going to find it necessarily. That's what he's trying to say. Okay, so this is really...
You can move to Israel and teach us on Zoom, and then we'll all be connected to Israel.
I should go to... If I'm Zooming from Israel, it'll work, you mean?
I did
Zoom with you when I was in Eretz Yisrael in November. Did you guys feel any better? Was it different? Was it a different experience? Okay, don't answer the question.
You felt better.
I felt better. I felt I was squeezed into a room to kind of try and find a place that was quiet in that house to Zoom. That's what I felt. Okay. Anyways, so that's the fourth piece. That's the fourth subsection. That's about what he calls authentic and distorted Jewish vision. Let's see if we can do this fifth piece, which is really the flip side, not the flip side of it, but the continuation really of this idea. Here it is. Let me go back to the original place. Here it is. This is four. So this calls me, it says, basically, we go to Eretz Yisrael, that's the place where you're going to get the authentic vision, the authentic ideas of what it is. Outside of Israel is not. It's distorted unless you kind of really have this wannabe, tshuka, and kasher, shel adam l'Eretz Yisrael, then maybe you can get some of it, or maybe all of it, or whatever. Okay, part five. Once again, it's a short piece here. So once again, this is really about prophecy, nevuah. Nevuah, it's hard to really understand what nevuah is. I think that's the challenge to understanding this piece. How do you define what nevuah is? What was a Navi doing? A Navi is getting a communication from Hashem. What does that actually mean? I mean, we read it all the time. What does it mean that God speaks to Moshe? What does he look like? Or what does God speak to Shmuel? Or what does God speak to any of the Nevi'im that we're learning about? Elisha, Eliyahu, or the unnamed Nevi'im that come up and say from Lachim Bet that we're doing? Are they falling on the floor? Are they ecstatic? Are they jumping up and down? What's going on here? Do they lose their senses? Are they out of control? Do they look like they're having an epileptic fit? Do they look like they are just simply doing kinesthetic exercises? And what's really going on in their mind? I mean, the closest that we can really have to understanding prophecy, I think, and you may want to shoot your darts if I say this, but hold on for a moment, is the things you see in a dream, right? The dreams that we dream at night, of course, are foolishness. They're not foolishness. They're not telling us anything. Most of the dreams are really just what your mind is replaying in different cracked ways, you know, remixed ways of things that you went through in your subconscious that may have never been worked out, or maybe wants to work itself out. So you probably have different dreams that make, you know, that you, of your life experiences in different ways. They don't make sense. Like every dream has pieces that just are rather illogical. I had a dream the other night. I was in an elevator and I pressed the button and the elevator shot out through the roof and I had to press the down button so I could get back into the shaft. We all have these crazy dreams. I'm not embarrassed to say that. You know, and then of course the elevator is going down. I had to press the stop button because it was going to crash down into the floor. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't think that's nevuah, but the concept of having this experience when it's an out of world experience that I'm not conscious of it, and I don't know what it is until I wake up later and realize what it is, I think is the closest we can understand what nevuah really is. So nevuah includes, and I want to be careful how I say this, but it definitely includes like a creative part of the Navi, intellectual part of the Navi, an imaginative part of the Navi. Not that he's making any of this up, but the way that he perceives and understands the word of Hashem to the Navi, it's to himself. Every Navi speaks differently. Every Navi has different phrases. They don't all speak the same cadences. In the same way that all of us speak English in different ways, not only different accents, but different ways, different phrases that we use and we're comfortable with. That's what Nevuah is. So Nevuah is really something very special and unique. Nevuah is hard to define what exactly it is. It does include somewhat of what they call here imaginative faculty. The faculty does not mean teachers. It means that your imagination is part of your brain. And since he writes here, prophecy is a function of the imaginative faculty, and as much as the imagination is warped in exile, prophecy is dependent on the land of Israel. Because your imagination, because your creativity, because your intellectual and imaginative aspect is not going to be 100%, something has changed. You don't have the real McCoy. So prophecy can't take place outside of Israel, or it can't start in Israel. It can't turn on the starter motor. Doesn't work on prophecy in Israel. There are a few examples we said are prophets who prophesied outside of Israel, but they started within. By the way, Yonah is a good example. Yonah thought that he could run away from Hashem. What kind of way? Who can run away from Hashem? Yonah thought if he leaves Israel, right, he runs away, then God won't be able to communicate with him. Because Yonah understood that prophecy has to be in Israel. What happened? God appeared to Yonah. God appears to Yonah everywhere. And of course, Yonah goes on his mission. He prophesies in Nineveh, which is outside of Israel. But Yonah was a prophet inside of Israel. We'll see Yonah, by the way. Yonah will come up as the name of a prophet or the name of a person later in Sefer Melachim Bet. And it may be the same Yonah that we talked about, the prophet Yonah. Anyways, so the fact that you can't reach complete understanding and complete the inner mysteries of Torah or Judaism and Chutz La'aretz means, therefore, that prophecy, which is really among the mysteries of mysteries, the most highest form of communicating with Hashem or getting God's communication, is also going to be cracked. Not cracked, I don't mean cracked crazy, I mean cracked broken, that doesn't work. Intellect is also affected as the two, imagination and intellect, are intertwined. So once again, If your imagination doesn't work well on Chutz La'aretz because you're not connected tightly in, so same thing, you won't get that full power. Like I gave you the example the other day, I think, of having like the electric cars that are coming out today. They all have chargers, but they usually have two different types of charger. They have their own charger that really is going to recharge the car in an hour or two, the quick charge, full charge. And then you'll also have many cases where if you plug it into a regular plug-in outlet, it can charge it. It's just a much slower charging rate or a different way than it charges. It takes a lot longer. It's not getting the full power itself. Or sometimes, you know, we have brownouts, or sometimes we don't get the full power that we really want to have, or batteries are worn down. So that's what the same thing in Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz itself. So that's what the natural connection or the natural continuation of the fact that, you know, the authentic Jewish vision of really deep down Judaism is only in Eretz Yisrael, that he writes in part number four, fulfills itself in part number five when he talks about prophecy, probably about Nevuah.
Rabbi, what about Bilam having some sort of prophecy outside? It was an evil prophecy, but he had it nonetheless.
Good. It's a good question. I don't know. How could Bilam see that? Did Bilam really get prophecy? I guess he did. He saw at the end he did get prophecy for the future. Yes. So I guess HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him some special exemption, you'd have to say. Chazal say that the Bilam was really the expert, not just in prophecy, but in knowing the one moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry with the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you know, has connected to us, but there are times he's closer and times he's further away. There's certain, for example, like today, sometimes there's a momentary break in the your current. So Bilam could spot that, and that's what he was able to looking for to try to curse the Jewish people. But you're right, there are certain nevuahs that he has. I don't know. Okay, I don't know. Maybe because the Jews are on the way to Eretz Yisrael. It's a good question. I have to think about it.
Your comments on dreams, where we say it's in your dreams and it's our imagination, and yet in the Torah, a lot of dreams were fulfilled, and that Hashem spoke to people in dreams, and yep, they were all fulfilled. So what happened from the reality of dreams to our imaginative one?
Right, so you want to know, what Avraham thing is asking is, how do you know if you get a real dream, if you get a dream where you get prophecy or you get some kind of Ruach HaKodesh? How will you be able to identify the difference between the nonsense or the rehash of the days or years or decades of your life, and that comes out in an unusual format in a dream, from what is really God speaking to you? I don't know, except I would suspect that God, if you get the same dream in multiple times and the dream has a certain significance to it, maybe God is trying to speak to you. All the stories that talk about God communicating in Ruach HaKodesh is God repeats the communication in the person when they're not conscious of what it is. So if you keep getting the same dream, you know, every day or every night, maybe think about what the significance is. But that's as far as I can go. I don't know. I'm not really an expert on dreams, and I'm even less an expert in terms of prophecy. But I think most of what I would be very, very hardy if I began to think that God was suddenly getting communications from Hashem. I think dreams that I'm getting are dreams that I think about, they, you know, what happened. If I really think about the dreams when I wake up, they usually go back to things that happened sometime in my lifetime in one form or another that suddenly worked their way back up to the consciousness, or subconsciousness, I should say. Okay? Don't have a better answer, Avram. If you keep getting the same dream every day, that may be a good thing. Let's go part A. Hadimyon shel Eretz Yisrael hu tzalul baror. Okay, so dimyon is being used here as imagination, and not comparison. Sometimes where dimyon means to compare. Rav Kook, by the way, Rav Kook is writing his Hebrew, of course, in the early 20th century. And some of these words have changed over the course of time. And sometimes Rav Kook is inventing words as he goes through this. There's some of his deep ideas, even Ben Yehuda didn't have real meaning for them. So dimyon here means you're imagining things. Imagination, by the way, is really comparing. Imagination is I'm thinking out of the box. I'm comparing something I don't know to something I do know. So the imagination of Eretz Yisrael is tzalul baror, is very pure and clear. And is also v'naki v'tahar, it's clean, v'tahar, it's pure. I guess tzalul means clear, barur is, tzalul is crystal clear, barur is clear to understanding, naki is clean, tahar is pure for purity, u'mesugal ofad ha'emet alaki, and is really suited for the emes, the truth of Hashem, to appear. Which means labashat achivitz haromim v'neskav shel ha'magama hidyalid. In order to how does he translate this? To dress up, to garb the chivitz haromim, the very high lofty object. He calls it will, I guess. Achivitz haromim v'neskav shel ha'magama hidyalid. The ideal magama direction or where we're going. Asher b'elyonot hakodesh, that are in the heights of holiness. So that's what the imagination can, in Eretz Yisrael, is pure, clear, and best, and everything else that is able to help garb us, dress us in the way to reach the heights of kedusha that we can. Muchan las barat nevuah v'yorosav, which is preparatory for being able to. I lost the place. Muchan las barat haskarat. Lahaz Borat Nevuah, to explain and understand the prophecy and the lights that come from the prophecy, the enlightening that comes from its prophecy, or the brightness of the prophecy itself. So the prophecy refers to, of course, Nevuah, and maybe as well Laf Hakad Ruach HaKodesh V'Zarav, and as well as the shining of Ruach HaKodesh, Divine Spirit, V'Zarav, and its, I guess, its rays, or its clear, its brightness itself. So in other words, the imagination there, as well, is much different. This goes in line with what he said before, the existence, the way that I can think, the way that I can reach understanding, understanding in Eretz Yisrael, in the deep mysteries of the Torah, is different from Chutz Laaretz. It doesn't mean that I'm going to eat my Cheerios any different in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean that the way I shop is different in Eretz Yisrael than the way I shop here. It doesn't mean that, you know, the simple things are going to change. But deep down, underneath, when I get down to the nub and figure out what the real meanings are, what the real purpose and the real existence of Judaism, something more is there in Eretz Yisrael I can't get here. And that was, and that sets me up for Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh only there. And the imagination that he lives, that is exists in the lands of the nations, he's referring across the diaspora. Diaspora, Achur, who is clouded, is muddy. Murav b'machashkim, it's mixed in together with things that make it dark. It's and mitzalalei tumav zihum, with shadows of impurity, and zihum is like sweatiness. All kinds of negativity and pollution. Zehum can be sweatiness, can be like pollution. So in other words, whatever kind of imagination I have in Chutz Laaretz is going to be murky, it's going to be unclear. I'm not really going to get down to the ultimate. Lo yuchal litnasei l'mrom kodesh. I can't reach the ultimate heights of kedusha. V'lo yuchal liot basis l'shifat ha'ora lokit matalem mikol shiflot ha'olamim hamitzu mitzrayhem. And it can't become the basis for the hashpa'ah, for the influence of the light of God, the godly light, which comes up from all the lowness of that's found in the world and those who created themselves. In other words, I can't really get to the heights of the Kedusha that I can get to in Eretz Yisrael. It can't be the basis for anything that's going to get beyond that. I guess I didn't make sure I translate correctly. It's not going to become the basis for the influence of the light, the godly light, which is going to go higher than the Shiflut Olamim, than higher than the lowness of the world that I'm living in, and the Creator's there. Because intellect and dimyon and imagination are connected one to the other. They're both imagination and intellect kind of work and work one on the other and can one to the other. So as well, the intellect of Chutz Laaretz can't be liot me'ir bi'oro shemer, so can't reach the light of Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because he says, and this is the quote that's taken from the Chazal, Avir de Eretz Yisrael machkim, the land of Eretz Yisrael, the air of Eretz Yisrael is going to be machkim itself. So here Rav Kook throws in the middle of all of this, it's almost like an afterthought. He says, you know, you can't rise to certain levels, and because of that, you got to understand that's why Nevuah is not going to happen in Chutz Laaretz. Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh is not going to be the same thing because something is not working here. Now, for most of us, the number 5 is probably less important than number 4, or number 5 is a corollary of number 4. Most of us do not aspire to be prophets. I don't know that any of us could be aspired to be prophets, even if we live in Eretz Yisrael. But if you had the potential to be one, you can only be it in Eretz Yisrael. That's what he's trying to say.
Rabbi, I have a conflict here. What is it? I'd like to ask Rav Kook himself, although I can't. But we study as a class Malachim every week.
Yep.
And the Malachim had prophets. So where was all of this stuff vis-a-vis the Malachim when there was prophecy? It's not like so many kings were exalted, they were spiritually pure.
Right. So the answer is yes. And that's what I said before, that you can have this looking you in the face and still not understand it. In other words, it doesn't mean suddenly you walk into Eretz Yisrael, you get off of the plane, you kiss the floor of the ground, you kiss the tarmac, and suddenly, bingo, you suddenly become a holy man. Right, and suddenly, you know, this is like they talk about in Jerusalem. There's the King David syndrome. There are all kinds of people walking around that think that they're King David and have all these kinds of visions and speak. They're crackpots. They go off the wall. But just being in Jerusalem, it's a syndrome that exists that afflicts people who are looking for spirituality. Sometimes when they get misguided, it's called the King David syndrome. Right? Sure, you must have met at one point when walking around Israel, walking around Jerusalem, people who think that they're still in the Bible. So you can be, but that's wrong, right? But the kings who lived in Eretz Yisrael in the days of the Bible, they were in an opportunity to reach the potential, but they still were pulled away by Avodah Zarah. We don't understand how idols can pull a person away. Can we even imagine, look at an object of stone, and would and say this is real, can you then you walk away from Hashem? For us, it's so primitive, it's so ridiculous. And the answer is yes, but we don't really understand what drew them away. But they were drawn away. And had they not been drawn away, they'd reach a greater height. That's why David was on a higher level. Shlomo was on a higher level. Yoshio, I just recorded a little bit of the story of Yoshio. Yoshio is that kind of guy. Except Yoshio's people didn't respond to him. Yoshio tried to get rid of Avodah Zarah, and the people hid the Avodah Zarah behind where Yoshio couldn't see it. It went on the ground. So the king, how could the king sin? Because you can always sin. You can always sin. You can always turn away from Hashem. But that's your choice, and that's your, I don't say your prerogative, it's your choice. Having said that, though, you do have a greater opportunity to go the other way. If you go the other way, you have an opportunity to grace higher levels. You could become a Navi. That's the difference. It's a good question, though. You expect, like, you know, things should be like super great in the days of the Tanakh, and yet you see it wasn't. They turned away. What happened? How did it take place? The answer is, yeah, they turned away.
I mean, I admire Rav Kook's idealism, but, like, I don't know. History just repeats with humanity, right?
Rav Kook is trying to say, so let's put it to Rav Kook. So Rav Kook, let's talk about the Rav Kook, who reaches out to all these kibbutzniks, all these different moshavim and secular pioneers and chalutzim and so forth. We read your story two days ago from Rav Neria. Rav Kook went in 1914 with Rav Sonnenfeld to his tshuva tour. They went all around and he came to a place and he got them to kosher the kitchen, and then he spoke a second time and the girl who said she'd never liked candles got up and said, I'm going to light Shabbos candles from now on. What Rav Kook says is that these guys who are living in Eretz Yisrael, before they made that decision, they were on the way to kind of being able to make that decision. That decision, maybe they could not have been inspired to make it if they had been in Chutz La'aretz. They're moving up a level. But even when they keep a kosher kitchen, right, and they're not doing certain other mitzvot. Let's not be foolish and think that these kibbutzniks who say we're going to make a kosher kitchen in the kibbutz or the moshav, whatever it was. What was it again? I forget. I can look up the story. But the bottom line was, it doesn't mean suddenly they did everything 100% either. They just decided that now we're going to have two sets of dishes, kosher kitchen. All the food here is going to be kosher. We're not going to mix up fleishiks and milchiks, Pesach and so forth. We're going to do it right. Doesn't mean that everything else was done right. Doesn't mean necessarily they kept Shabbos. Then Rav Kook spoke to them and the girl said, I'm going to light Shabbos candles. Doesn't mean that she was going to keep all the Shabbos. But Rav Kook understood that they were in the right place that they could then develop and to reach a certain super highness. In other words, you need to have the right environment to be able to fly high. And Rav Kook is saying that place is there as well. So it's important for him to reach out to these people because they're already in the right place and they've begun the process just by moving there as well. And the idealism of these people, of these chalutzim, was misguided perhaps into secular idealism, into socialist idealism to some extent. But Rav Kook understood if he could just turn that a little bit, he could get them to fly high. But that's where we are today. You say, we always ask two questions. How come in the days of the Bible it was so bad? Because it didn't do what was supposed to be right. How come today we haven't reached what Rav Kook says? Because we're still in diapers. We're still taking baby steps. It's coming. We tend to forget that we're only a drop in the ocean in the history of the world. And Rav Kook is not writing this in 1920 to expect that in 1921 things are going to change. They didn't. They didn't. They didn't change for quite a while. In fact, what changes things in Eretz Yisrael, of course, is that after the Shoah, all the people come to Eretz Yisrael, and they kind of, the numbers simply add up and become much more larger, and as a result, more religious Jews come, more irreligious Jews come, and the numbers build upon themselves and so forth. Okay.
Although the finality is the Mashiach comes and it changes anyways.
Yeah, but Mashiach has not yet come. But we have to make the first steps. According to Rav Kook, you've got to make the first kind of steps to bring Mashiach.
Of course.
Okay. Anyways, there's one footnote here I want to do on this piece itself. This footnote number 2027. This is the piece that Rav Kook is writing, where he's talking about the fact that because the imagination Eretz Yisrael is pure and clear, and it's able to bring down the truth of Hashem, and you can therefore be garbed with it. So this is going to be Muchan Lasbarat Nevuah, or it says able to bring down the potential of prophecy in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, now this is once again Bitzal on the R. We'll do some of his footnotes. I think they're very instructive. Since ancient rabbinic tradition writes in the R that prophecy rests only in the land of Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Kook actually will talk about it a little bit next piece as well. The question arises why this should be so. So Rav Kook takes a psychological approach. Rav Kook talks, if you will, about this creativity and imagination, intellectual ability, which is better and clearer. Rambam had written that prophecy is the product of the imaginative faculty. Rambam writes this in the Mor Nebuchim Guide to Perplex. Rav Kook couples this assumption to the mystic belief that imagination must suffer in the impure atmosphere outside the land. So Rav Kook is mixing in a little bit of philosophy of the Rambam, which talks about the imaginative faculty, which is really can only reach prophecy in land of Eretz Yisrael. Rav Kook mixes that in with Kabbalistic concepts, that imagination is going to suffer in the impure atmosphere outside the land of Eretz Yisrael. And it must be stressed that this is Rav Kook's takeoff on the Rambam. There's absolutely no indication that the writings of Rambam that he is subscribed to the belief that prophecy is limited to the geographical borders of Eretz Yisrael. So I didn't check this out, but B'Tzal Na'or says, even though clearly there's a lower level according to the Rambam, because prophecy is a product of imaginative faculty, and therefore if imaginative faculty is going to be less in Eretz Yisrael, so prophecy can't be outside of Eretz Yisrael. Rambam doesn't write that. Rambam simply writes that prophecy is the product of imaginative faculty. You need imagination to be able to make prophecy work. You got to be able to think out of the box. Like your dreams are your imagination coming around full circle. That's really what the dreams are. Your brain is thinking in ways it's out of your control, but it's the fact that dreams are so crazy sometimes is because the imagination takes a hold of the dream. So somewhere, imagination, which is not connected to reality of 3D, takes the place. The dream that I had, that I'm in the elevator and I push the top up button and it shoots out through the top of the shaft and starts flying up in the sky, that's imagination. I don't even know what that's based upon. I can't even recreate what was I thinking. The answer is I wasn't thinking. My imagination took over the dream, right? But the same thing applies to Nevuah. So Rambam says that prophecy relates to this imaginative faculty. Rav Kook takes this and mixes this together with Kabbalistic concepts that says, therefore, that your imagination is going to suffer outside of Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, Rav Kook makes the connection to say, therefore, the prophecy can't be outside of Eretz Yisrael. Rambam never says it directly. Many people think the Rambam does. He doesn't. Rav Kook and others do say it. But there's absolutely no indication in the writings of Rambam that he subscribes to the belief that prophecy is limited to geographical borders of Eretz Yisrael. Quite the contrary, the entire tenor of the Rambam's theory of prophecy is universalistic, and that's found in the Guide to Perplex, the Mor Nebuchim, if you want to follow up. So all of B'Tzal and Nahor is just saying is, it's true that some of this is really connected to Rambam, but it's really connected to Rav Kook's really own ideology and theology in terms of trying to understand what the basis is. So what have we said today? Let me kind of just summarize this for what we have before we kind of lose our time itself. So first of all, we did two pieces, which is terrific because we only get a chance to do one, but they're two short pieces. Sometimes the pieces of Rav Kook are short, sometimes they're long. Remember, we told you Rav Kook has different ideas and different pieces that his son puts together in order. So Rav Kook doesn't write this as a cohesive piece that 4 goes into 5 and 5 goes into 6. Rav Tzvi Yehuda did that. But you see how 4 went into 5. And you'll see 5 goes into 6. So it talks more about Nebuah. So first of all, number one is only in Eretz Yisrael can the Jew be faithful to his true creative and intellectual faculties. That's what we talked about. Number two, in the Chutz La'aretz, Jewish thought and creativity are mixed in with influences, bad influences, murky influences, non-Jewish influences, non-Jewish cultures, non-Jewish spiritual ideas. Number three, creativity exists only with in Eretz Yisrael in terms of what? No, we didn't really define that. But the creativity we're talking about is the unique creativity probably of Emunah. And so I'm not sure that Rav Kook would actually say that the creativity in literature or art or science or any other discipline cannot happen outside of Eretz Yisrael. When Rav Kook talks about the creativity of a person for Judaism, he's talking about being able to connect this world to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the creativity. That can only happen, that happens best in Eretz Yisrael. Let's say it like that. He said, Eretz Yisrael, Avir, Eretz Yisrael, Machim, the Yer of Eretz Yisrael makes a person wise. Life in Chutz La'aretz, therefore, what about life in Chutz La'aretz? So Rav Kook would have to say that there's a lot of good individual Jews in Chutz La'aretz, but in Eretz Yisrael, it's the life of the nation. That's something that Rav Kook doesn't really say directly here. It says in other places, you want to get down to the nation, you want to build a nation, build a people, a community, you got to build an Eretz Yisrael. You can still have great individuals in Chutz La'aretz, but they can't be brought together. Yeah.
In the Parsha of Lech Lecha, would we not say that when Avraham was talking to Hashem, that was a prophetic discussion?
Yes, let me hold off on the question until I do this to finish this up. Okay, I want to make sure. All right. Okay. Now, a person, then Rav Kook said something else on number four, that if you really want to go to Eretz Yisrael and you really want to share in these special brachas of Eretz Yisrael, then you know what you get? You're on a higher level. You're on a higher level than that of Chutz Laretz. You're like the higher level of the people living in Eretz Yisrael in some format, either full or almost. And of course, I guess conversely, of course, if you kind of you really commemorate Tisha B'Av, that you really commemorate the loss of Eretz Yisrael, that's another way that we can actually connect ourselves to Eretz Yisrael. That's number four. Number five, which is the corollary of that, is the imagination of Eretz Yisrael. We talked about this. The Demyon is clear, is pure, is unpolluted, and consequently you're able to receive Ruach HaKodesh, and you're able to receive Nevuah. Nevuah, prophecy, and Ruach HaKodesh, divine communication. This, the imagination outside of Eretz Yisrael, on the other hand, is dirty, it's polluted, it can't form the basis for Nevuah, and it can't form the basis for Ruach HaKodesh. And because, now this is the last piece itself, well, first of all, the land of Eretz Yisrael, the air, creates people being wise, but because the faculties of imagination and intellectuality are connected or interconnected, so if the imagination is polluted, which is really gets the nevuah, then the intellect will be polluted as well. If the imagination is not complete, then the intellect does not complete itself. Why? Because the imagination outside of Eretz Yisrael is really polluted, it's unhealthy, therefore the intellect outside of Eretz Yisrael can't illuminate with the great light that we can only find in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the last piece. Now, I'm really not quite sure how to define what is imagination versus intellect, except I think intellect I'm more in control of. Imagination is my mind goes wild. So intellect was trying to say my ability to probe and analyze and understand it. You're going to say, but aren't there people in there in Chutz Laretz who had great minds and great scholars? Yes, there were. Yes, there were. So either you'd say that there are individuals who can break the mold, or perhaps you would say that if they lived in Eretz Yisrael, but if they lived in Eretz Yisrael, they would have been greater. There you go. That would probably be the response Rav Kook would say. But in general, I mean, in general, people say, what has changed since 1920? I'll tell you what's changed since 1920. Eretz Yisrael as a center for Torah thought, for Torah learning, for Torah leadership has actually developed. I'm not saying that there are no leaders outside the land of Israel. There are. There are religious leaders, there are theological leaders, there are great Torah leaders living in many communities. But when you look today and you want to say, I want to find out where are the, and I got to be careful how we use the term because it can be misused, the great scholars, I don't want to use the term gedolim because that sometimes leads to kind of misunderstanding. But really true blue people that people turn to for leadership, for understanding, for giving you how to make Torah apply to the modern world, you find that a good chunk of that is in Eretz Yisrael today. It did not always happen like that. It did not happen 50 years ago. It did not happen before the land of Eretz Yisrael developed for sure, even though there were great scholars there as well. They were locked in their own corners. But this concept of Eretz Yisrael being a center for intellectual prowess, study, research, and understanding of what Torah and Halacha and spirituality is all about is very unique. You're going to find it much more so in Israel than you will walking around anywhere in any city in the world itself. Why? Because that's what Eretz Yisrael really is. Now, you had a question. I'll take questions finally before we break off. Yes, Jeff, a question about Lech Lecha? Forget it.
I just mentioned how Avraham contradicted Rav Kook. Avraham in Lech Lecha is connected with Hashem through prophetic
connection. Oh, so you're telling me that Avraham gets a prophetic connection from Hashem even before he gets there as well. True.
Well, we read it in Lech Lecha.
Yeah, okay. So I think I think one answer is that if it's to get to Eretz Yisrael, maybe it has almost like the wannabe that makes up the Rav Kook piece that says if you're a wannabe to be in Eretz Yisrael, and you really want to be in Eretz Yisrael, it's like you have that kind of clarity like being in Eretz Yisrael. So what does God appear to Avraham? He says, Lech Lecha, take yourself and get to Eretz Yisrael. The land I'm going to show you. I think that's how Rav Kook could be squeezed in to maybe understand that. Yes, Semi?
Rabbi, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer here.
Oh, no, not Debbie Downer. No, don't be a Debbie Downer. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to keep it real.
Yeah.
Your last point that, you know, it's in Israel today, blah, 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 there's more of this, more of that. I think you have to also remember that there's more than 50% of the Jews living in Israel today, so it may not be solely qualitative. When you get the mass, the quantitative, then you're going to have those numbers. Okay. So it may not be we're
so
on this.
I'm going to take your Debbie Downer and say I think that actually supports the concept. In other words, not only do we have the great, great leaders there, but you've got so many more Jews that are there to be led. That he gufa. That's exactly the point. It's not. I'm not looking at the percentages. I'm not saying, you know, in the diaspora, 1 out of 1,000 Jews is a scholar, and in Israel, 1 out of 100 Jews is a scholar. No, I'm just saying there's so much more learning going on. It's if you have more people.
Okay, I'll go back to my corner now. Thank you.
Anyways, no, keep it going.
Sunday.
Keep it going. Anyways.
Prophecy is coming true, man.
There we go. It is. Anyways, that wraps it up. Pretty much wraps it up for today. I know we got about 2 minutes to go. So tomorrow, what are we going to do? Tomorrow, we're actually going to do stuff from the Sfas Emes and from the Ishbitzer on Parsha Shmini. I'm not sure if I have a piece or two to go back to Rav Cook. I think it pretty much did. Not Rav Cook. A piece or two to go from Rav Salvechik. But I think the piece I have from the Sfas Emes are a little complicated, but I think we can do them. And then the second half, we're going to come and talk about the continuation of the story of who is the king that we're up to now. I'm starting to lose it. I'm forgetting it, guys. You'll remind me. Remind me which king we're up to. There's a whole bunch of kings that we go through back and forth. Oh, we're going to do tomorrow. Hopefully, we're going to get to King Uzziah. King Uzziah, or sometimes called Azariah, who was a good king, but at one point made a big mistake. You know what the mistake is? Should I tell you or leave it for a trailer? I'll tell you. The trail that he decided to be, he wanted to be the Kohen Gadol too. And when he decided to become the Kohen Gadol, what happened to him when he walked into the temple to become the Kohen Gadol? That you gotta come tomorrow to find out. But there you go. King is a king, prophet is a prophet, Kohen is a Kohen, and then the three different types of groups of people. King cannot become a prophet. You can't become a Kohen unless you're a Kohen. That's the old joke, but that's really what happens in the story of Uzziah for tomorrow. And we'll find something that we can sing about at the very end of the story itself. And there'll be someone from Zichron Dov, I'm sure, will give us the Dvar Torah. 12 o'clock, guys. Here we are.
Man.
We're out of time. Okay. Okay.
Thank
have
you.
A wonderful
Thank
day. Jeff, Albert, Tzemi, Rafael, and Avram, have a Yom Tov. Good day. Tzemi, keep them coming. Keep it real. Okay.